day. Welcome to the News 24 Motoring Podcast, Driving with J9. I'm Janine van der Post, and in studio today we have two very special guests, Grandmaster DJ Ready D and DJ Easy. So why would we have two big music masters as guests, and what do they have to do with cars? But where there are cars, there is music, especially hip-hop, and where there is hip-hop, there are usually cars involved too. I know both of you for more than two decades, and despite having a much longer and lustrous career, but whenever I saw either of you, there was always cars in the background, cars were somehow involved. What would you say is the connection between hip-hop and cars, and why, especially here in South Africa?
I grew up around cars all my life as a kid, before hip-hop came along. I was always fascinated by cars. At school, I used to draw cars. I used to dream about cars. My ambition and my dream as a young boy was to be a stuntman one day, to fly cars off buildings and mountains, and the same for motorcycles. So I think somehow inherited a little bit of that adrenaline junkie sort of DNA. I don't know where it comes from, but I was always fascinated. And I guess it's got a lot to do with the movies I was exposed to as well, because my father used to do bioscope in District 6 for the community. So Steve McQueen driving his Mustang in the Bullet and doing all the crazy stuff, that was the one thing that grabbed my attention. And when he did that 360 loop, it was done. I was sold. And then my father took me to Goodwood Showgrounds, and I saw a guy on a motorcycle going up a ramp, going through a ring of fire, and midway through his jump, he was set alight as well. And then he jumped through that ring and through a window, and I was like, holy Lord, that's me right there. So that was always my fascination with cars and bikes growing up.
Yeah. So do you think that at that point you probably thought that your future would involve cars in some way?
I don't think I thought about it growing up. I could feel it would be there in some form or fashion. And then just going back to hip-hop culture, when the music came along, you know, with the songs like Rapper's Delight and Curtis Blow, you hear the music and you hear these guys talking about cars. And when you hear about Cadillacs and the type of things that we don't have in South Africa, the cars that didn't come this way, it makes you more curious. And all of a sudden you see it in one of these American movies, and then they go, oh gosh, that's that car the guy was rapping about. And then the music videos start coming out. Then Run DMC and everybody else starts dropping videos. Yeah. And then you see the American car culture being highlighted in these videos. And that makes it even more enthusiastic as well. And as the years go by, then there's movies like Herbie that comes along. Then there's Batman. Then there's this one and that one. And there's just cool cars everywhere else. Yeah. And as a kid, you can imagine what that does to your brain. Yeah. And I think just to fast forward on the timeline, we were also exposed to Papa Wheelie as well. Mm. You know, these days it's called spinning, but we know Papa Wheelie is doing donuts and burnouts and all these things at this place called Indiana, in Athlone, in Cape Town City, Athlone, yeah. Gatesville, and then, of course, the Pavilion as well. So I was exposed to all of that stuff as a young kid. And once again, I always get the flashbacks of Evel Knievel and all those other guys I saw as a kid coming up. And to see these things unfold right in front of your eyes, it just draws you in even more, and it makes you more passionate.
It's crazy. And you, Easy, I mean,
It's not the similar story, but I think for me, we didn't have a car growing up. My dad had a company car. So, you know, there's this thing where it's aspirational, where it's like, you want to get a car. And then I'm the baby of three sons. So my older brothers, the one who didn't have a car, didn't have a girlfriend. So to me, it made sense. Like, the first thing you need is get a car. Then you get a girlfriend, get your priorities straight. But I think, when you think of music, a lot of times in the music, it looks like an achievement of success. So when these guys have these big cars, they come from similar backgrounds. You know, it's like people call it impoverished neighborhoods, or, you know, lower income, middle class or whatever. So you feel like, okay, when you get that car, this is like a form of success. And when you look at the MTV shows, Pimp My Ride, or you look at the music videos, obviously when you get older, you figure out, oh, half of these cars are endorsed or sponsored. Yeah. So it's actually not success. It's just like a loan. But then at the same time, you want to be authentic, and you like hip-hop is about keeping it real. So I don't want to drive another person's car that everyone knows it's not my car. So now you're just like, okay, when you have a car, man, and it's like growing up on the Cape Flats, you just see, you know, from the box type Nissans and, you know, the 30S, and then you get familiar with it. So I'm not you know, in any way, mechanically inclined. One of my best friends is into the diesel trade and a mechanic, but I just love cars. And the connection with hip-hop has always been like a big car, you know, and like big wheels. And the association is, like I said, it's a success story, but at the same time, it's sort of like hard work. If you work hard, then you can get stuff, you know what I mean? So that was the draw to it.
I mean, even now, despite your many years, almost two decades in radio, and never mind being a producer and DJing, cars is very much part of your careers. And I know you, all three of you, your wife Malika as well, Dion, she's drifting, you drifted, you've been using that as outreach projects with youth development. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. Let me just go back to my first car very quickly because DJ Easy mentioned the Ford Cortina 30S. So back in the 80s when I won my first South African DJ championship, I won $5,000. That was a part of the prize money, so to say. Okay. There was DJ equipment and a whole lot of other things. The day I landed back home from Pretoria with that 5,000 in cash in my pocket, the first thing I did was go to Tafelsig because there was a bra there that had a Cortina 30S, a black one with a 5-star mag, side skirts, and it had a louver on it, and my gods on it. And a quiet tape and a sound system. So that was my first car, and many people would associate me and my journey through hip hop music and culture with that car. So my first and second cars were Ford Cortina 30S's, and then my neighbor right opposite me had the Ford Cortina Interceptor. Jay was John, I wanted that car so much.
So how much did you pay for that car?
5,000. All my money.
All your money.
Just like that. Opitafel, boom. Came out of that car. I drove that thing out of it. Like Izzy also said, you feel like you've made it in life. Because it's a 30S. It's not just any old car, you know. So then just to fast forward very quickly, you know, through a timeline from the 80s through to, let's say, mid-2000 or early 2000s, I was then introduced to this option DVDs that came out of Japan. Some of my friends had these DVDs floating around. And when I saw these Japanese guys putting cars sideways, I was, holy mother, how do you do that? Because remember that old childhood aspirations, all that stuff starts playing out in your head. You know, speed and racing and all those things, to a certain extent, it was cool, but it didn't really stick with me. I needed something more. So when I saw a guy put the car sideways and keeping it there, I was like, holy mother, this is it. And then about a year later, the Fast and Furious drops. And at the same time, we are doing a TV show called Mzansi Rides as well. So I'm right there, fully entrenched in the world of cars, some entertainment, TV shows. My life, I had the BMW with a wide body kit with a turntable built in and the whole thing. So I'm deep into it right now. So you've seen so much because you travel the world, but seeing those cars going sideways, that for me was the thing. Fast and Furious Tokyo drift drops. Then there's this event at the nightclub in Lansdowne, and they have it, a Fast and Furious Tokyo drift event in the parking lot. And there comes a guy with a gold Nissan S13 200SX with the same graphics that they have in Japan. And I thought, this is a Japanese brother just jumped out of that DVD, and he's here, and he goes by the name of Fahim Sali. And he puts that car sideways and he holds the line. You know, everybody else is out there trying. You know, so they're spinning or they're popping wheelies. They're throwing their cars around frantically and they're doing burnouts and, you know, they're doing rollbacks and all these things. That's cool. But I wanted to know, how do you control that car and how do you keep that thing going sideways? And fast forward through the timeline, we get invited to this event at Kilani. Fahim's in the room. And I remember stepping up to Fahim and telling him, please, you have to teach me to drift. And he was like, D, I'll teach you to drift if you teach me to DJ. I'm here to teach him to DJ. Es dou doch weg. Anyway, I then sold her car. A car. And then I bought a Nissan S13 myself. And that's practically how my journey began. And then through the development work, we formed this crew called the Drift Squad. We were quite a big team, though. And unfortunately, there was some mishap that that took place within the crew. We lost a team member. He was involved with illegal street racing. And there's a couple of other incidents that hit home as well. Mm. And we noticed all the interest coming from so many different people in what we were doing from an educational standpoint. Right. The Mark Shuttleworth Foundation displayed interest. Falls Bay College. Mm. We got calls from them to bring our cars and to interact with youth. And then myself and my wife, Malika, we had a discussion and we thought, look, let's rather get ourselves organized and put some more energy and focus into road safety because we are interacting right. with youth. And it's young people and families that come out to see us, you know, at our practice and at events. And that's practically how SR4A or Safer Roads for All started.
Wow. So what are the plans for the future? Is it still ongoing? How often do you do it?
It's still ongoing.
Okay.
We are currently busy with quite a huge program at the moment.
Mm.
And there's quite a bit attached. So we got a non-profit organization called GCAP. It stands for the Great Cape Ambassadors Program. And under GCAP, we have SR4A, which is the Road Safety Initiative. Then we have the Beat Bangers DJ Academy. And then we have Kids Music Fun. But they all are sort of interconnected, if you want to call it that. So we've been partnering with the guys from Racing for Change at Kilani. And they do the Gymkhanas.
Yes.
And we've been running our SR4 programs in partnership with those guys. We used to run the program during the daytime, but since I moved to daytime radio, that threw a spanner in the works and we had to regroup and re-strategize and find another way of getting the program moving forward as well. We also did partnership programs with the city with their Safely Home online campaigns and those types of things as well. So we're practically out here now, reaching out to potential partners to come on board and partner with us. There's a whole lot of ideas and exciting things that we can do. And I think the formula has been tried and tested as well. We also, I don't think anybody else did a drift tour to campuses around the city, which we managed to do. And Malika was actually the face for that campaign, and she was actually the driver for that campaign as well. So we wish to build on all of those things because the stats don't favor us as Capetonians and as South Africans. Our road safety track record, it is bad at the moment. We're among the worst in the world.
Yeah,
so absolutely. We have a lot of responsibility, you know, as adults, I would say.
Yeah. And I know, you know, there was the incident with the cars, a really sad story. Do you have new cars yet? Have they been rebuilt?
We have cars, but building a car, oh my gosh.
I don't think you have enough time.
Oh my gosh. Let's say we're trying to fix four cars as we speak. Oh. One car had two bearing knocks. Two cars had bearing knocks and trying to revive a car that was burnt in that fire. She lost her car completely. So we got another S13 for her, but it will never be the same car. And to get it to that point, it is a difficult task as well. So we view the cars as equipment in our road safety program. So we have to get the equipment up and running. And since the incident happened and COVID happened right now, just the prices of everything has skyrocketed. And it's a huge battle for us to get there because all the money comes out of our own pockets. So it's a hard task, but thankfully we're getting there. It's a slow process, but we're getting there.
And where do you hold these road safety programs and stuff with these development youth programs?
The road safety programs have been happening at Kilani International Raceway. Okay. We also participated in Drift City on the Grand Parade as well. And they would give us a section to do the public rides and the exhibitions. But it always comes with a road safety message and responsibility, you know, and awareness about road safety attached to that. Because at the end of the day, that's our disclaimer as well. And like I've mentioned earlier on, the kids will drag their moms and their dads there. The kids want to get in the cars and all this. So we'll make sure that you're strapped in. We explain to them, you know, what is about to happen. We also love to throw the ball back into their court as well. So as an example, when we put the kid in the car in Kilani and we go onto the oval because it's very fast. You know, if you're going through the top bin, your initiation speeds need to be over 100 kilometers per hour. And just depending on the skill level and your car, you could end up initiating at about 120 to 140 kilometers per hour. And when you go into the initiation, the G-forces hit you as well. So we need to prepare the passengers for that experience as well. You know, some people just naturally love the madness.
Yeah.
We'll spin the cars out on the track and all these things. And usually what we do is we'll ask these kids, now, what do you think would have happened if we had to do this on a public road, automatically that kid starts thinking and the kid will go, wow, we could have been dead. We could have killed somebody. We could have crashed into a taxi, a bus, into somebody, into an animal. So that is practically how we operate, because we know the cars and going sideways, that is the carrot to draw them in. Now you got the attention. Now you don't have to preach to them. Now we give you the experience and you walk away with this experience that you'll remember for the rest of your life. Job done. You got the experience. You got the message. You go home. You tell mom, dad, don't drink and drive. Or if brother wants to get involved, whoever wants to get involved with illegal street racing, you tell them you don't have advanced driving experience, because I've been in a car on a track with an experienced driver. And if you lose control of this car, we're all going to die. We could potentially end up in hospital, whatever the case may be. So that's been our strategy through the years with the program.
Okay, that's great. Either you started your career, I believe, in a CD shop.
I'm thinking, what didn't I do? So this guy came to my high school a long time ago. If I give my age away, 1993, he came to my high school. But I had met him and the band. He was with Prophets of the City prior through a competition. And after winning the competition, I met Mr. Fat, the great Ashley Titus. He then said, I can introduce you. And I thought he was talking nonsense. And I was like, he's name dropping. So I remember meeting, you know, the band Prophets of the City. And then when they did the Rapping for Democracy tour, they came to my high school. And I knew automatically, yeah, this is what I want to do. It wasn't the fact that, oh, because Mr. Fat knew him. It's like, I want to do that. So it's kind of mind blowing to think that now we work together 30 years later. But yeah, I then dabbled in, you know, I managed a CD store. The guy who owned the shop also worked for a record label. From there was always a connection to the music. And I had the fortunate or the pleasure to actually travel with the band a few times when they did trips. And then again, the car thing, you know, was a thing from the van. You know, the van had to be a certain aesthetic. It had to have a wheel. It had to have a sound system. Like Dee said, he had the 30S. A cousin of mine who was called Warrior, he also passed away. He was the one who told me, you know, there's this guy in Antigua who's a DJ who's got this 30S, because he had a 30S. But the connection's always been there. And now, when you get older, like I said, you get into this thing and you're thinking, I want to get girls, I want to get money. Yeah. But then you become responsible. And when you're responsible, you want to teach other people to be responsible. So it's not about letting the young kids become the best DJ, the best graffiti writer or rapper. It's being the best human. And if we call humans, we can actually go further, you know, as a collective. Now just working together. I've been in a drift car with D. I'm scared to get in the car with follow my eyes here. Because
me too. I prefer.
So I'm scared to get in the car with her, but I'll get in the car with him. But I mean, she's a safe driver, obviously. So it's just, it's like so common, because you don't realize you're learning when you're having fun.
Yeah.
And that's our concept now. So, you know, we're having fun while we're doing it. And people always ask me, like, I worked with D for 3 months, and my then boss said, you have to invoice us. And I said, what? He's like, you didn't send an invoice. And I was like, oh, I forgot. And he was like, don't you need the money? I'm like, yeah, I did, but I forgot, because I wasn't doing it for that, because our history has always been money's a bonus. Money's not the motivation, man. So even now, and at one point, like Dee was saying, I also had the car with the spinning rims and, I don't know, 48 speakers. Shout out to, or rest in peace, Muhsin from Audio Maniacs, because he sorted out the van for me. And then I was like, this is dumb. This is dumb. There's 48 speakers in this car. I can't talk to anybody. There's screens behind me and no one's sitting in the car. It just doesn't make sense, man, you know. Take that money and, you know, either put it in the studio or, you know, do something practical with it. And now we're here, like I said, you know, producing the radio show for him. We actually also worked the car culture into our show. When I met with Dee, it's his show, you know, I must bring his vision to life. He's got this Rides and Vibes concept. So we talk lifestyle, we talk cars, we talk tech in cars, we talk about female drivers. You know, sometimes people look at the rim, they go, oh, this is a lady driver, look at the rim, so for bad parking. But we try and, you know, debunk those myths. We talk, like I said, AI. We had people on the show that was involved with the development of that automated cars and stuff. So it's always going to be there. But yeah, like I said, you know, now we're just at this place where it's like every day is a blessing, and we just take it one step at a time. We've got big dreams, big aspirations. And, you know, just try and help where we can, man. So it's super, super cool to still be able to do this. And only talking to you now, we actually realize how long we've been doing it.
Yeah.
Like, it is insane that we've done it for this long. And we're hopefully going to be around longer, yeah.
And do more good work. I think as long as I've known all of you, we've always spoken about cars. There's always been, never mind what I do, we've always just spoken about cars. There was always some link. But it brings me to the BV Car documentary that was released. Was it October?
Yes.
Yeah. And I've mentioned I haven't seen it yet. And I have to do it this weekend. But in part, it was also a tribute to Ashitaitis, known as Mr. Fat. And Dee, you said in a previous interview that the story unpacks the impact and phenomenal elements of hip-hop culture. What would you say is SA's hip-hop culture?
I think we have a very interesting hip-hop culture in South Africa because of the diversity, you know, of who we are as South Africans as well. And with so many other different people from different walks of life and backgrounds and cultures, you know, coming onto our shores and settling here and all these things. So that obviously impacts and influences the culture as well. So the scene's very different from between Cape Town and Joburg and elsewhere as well. You know, I think in Cape Town, people are still very much about the five elements. When it comes to DJing or being a hip-hop DJ / turntablist, rapping or being the MC, graffiti art, breaking, that's the art of B-boys and B-girls, in layman terms, breakdancing. And of course, what's regarded as the fifth element, the element of knowledge yourself. So we have a lot of academics, critical thinkers, and these types of people that's very involved with it as well. And then there's also a huge sort of step towards First Nation awakening that's taking place through hip-hop music and culture as well. And also the way we speak, the dialect, all of those things are kind of injected into the music as well. Elsewhere in the country, I can't say much. We know that Joburg is known for being the commercial hub for it as well. But then there are pockets of people that kind of, you know, also focuses on the five elements, so to say. And more the, if you want to call it more the developmental upliftment and awareness and the consciousness side of the culture as well. But for me, I'm always... I think I'm always going to be a little bit biased, you know, and back Cape Town because it comes with so many challenges. And I think Cape Town creatively and just as a human being and from an artistic standpoint, it pushes you beyond the brink of what is possible as well. And I think we have the worst critics in the world in Cape Town City. And I always tell people, if you can make it in Cape Town, New York, you'll eat it up. Chips. New Yorkers chips. Don't tell me if you made it in New York, you'll make it anywhere. No. Come and try and make it in Cape Town. And I think in Cape Town, we are still very much passionate about hip-hop as a culture, not just as a music. And that was passed on from, I would say, one generation to the next as well, from the first generation all the way through. So if you look at POC, BVK, Emil, Black Noise, Hill the Hood Projects, Godessa, just to throw a couple of names out there of people that were really spearheading, if you want to call it, the culture and the educational aspects thereof. I think that strengthens that as well. Then we also have Dr. Adam Haupt. You throw him into the mix. He's a professor at UCT, and he's done so many different studies on the culture from an academic standpoint. I think all of those are kind of adding to the foundations and the building blocks to strengthen, you know, hip hop.
Yeah.
When you think of Mr. Fat, also something that for me is very important for us to carry on as his legacy. Yeah. He didn't like when people use the word savor Afrikaans. Because when you say savor, it's like when you say pure juice, like savor. Yeah. So you said, if you're saying this is savor, then it means what we're doing is not pure. Mm-hmm. And how can it not be if this is our people? So I remember him always, you know, challenging that narrative when, I mean, say it was the fierce, which is like predominantly Afrikaans, white festival. He wouldn't, you know, go in there and be like sort of the thorn amongst the birds, so to speak, you know, amongst the roses, and be like, no, this is how we speak. I can't rah, rah, rah.
Yeah.
And he challenged it whether it was presenters on radio, you know, who are of color or whatever, and on TV and whatnot. I mean, if you think of a show like Backstage, Prasavani Kapu, guests on Backstage, they then end up on Seven Run. And a lot of those shows were sort of like, you have to speak it this way, but now they mix it. And then Pasaro. And again, it's like, if you understand where you're coming from, you know where you're going. So if there wasn't a BV car, there wouldn't be a Yemo Biasim, who then became a presenter on Pasaro. And if you watch the documentary, it's amazing that a lot of the guys who are the now weren't maybe around or didn't know. Jack Paro wasn't called Jack Paro before, but he pays homage and says, look, he knows. When he saw Brasafani Kaap, he knew. He felt validated, so to speak, and his language wasn't ignored. Because when you come up and all you see on TV is American hip-hop or, you know, music from Europe, you think that's what you have to do. If you listen to Youngster's first three mixtapes, you think, who's this guy wanting to be America? And now if you think about it, doesn't matter who you are in South Africa. If you're under 35, you know who's Youngster. Mm-hmm. You know where he's from. He represents his, you know, his city. He represents his faith and the people, you know, that's coming. So I think that's very important. And that's something that we can be super proud of. And like Dee was saying, I actually went to New York. I spent 6 months there. And none of the New York people are trying to be New York. They want to come here. You know, they're all like, I want to be at home. I want to be in Africa, Africa, Africa. And it's like, but here you have Africa wanting to be there, call each other the N-word, which is dumb. So again, we have something, it's big shoes to fill. When we think of Mr. Fat, like I said, he left a great legacy here. I was fortunate to work with him in a program called Music Therapy in Edelfeld, where, again, it's kids that, they've never seen turntables before, but we take DJ Azul there to do a DJ workshop. And for them, they don't want to DJ. They just want to see it because they only see it on TV, but making it accessible, man. So making us proud of where we come from. One, like I said, that's something I'm very, you know, inspired by his legacy. And then, of course, talking the way we talk. And like he was saying, Adam and Professor Quentin Williams from UWC now have an Afrikaans dictionary that our president gave the green light for. You know, in his State of the Nation address, he mentioned the fact that there are a bunch of hip-hoppers. Do you know what I mean? So that, for me, if you told me 30 years ago, you're going to put this guy on the radio, I'd be like, you're talking nonsense, and then say he's going to have his own TV show, or that we're going to be acknowledged by the president and have a dictionary then, you know? So, yeah, we've come a long way.
Yeah, really long way. It's so funny that we're doing this at this time with Ashi's anniversary coming up on the 28th, and it'll be 17 years since he's passed. I mean, I remember that day. And just thinking about it last night, I was getting a bit teary-eyed and choked up because Ashi was really larger than life. When he spoke, no matter who he spoke to, I think he treated everyone the same, and he spoke with such conviction. I remember he was my brother's hero. I got my brother, or Ashi, to speak to him, and because he was with the wrong friends and started doing the wrong things. And my brother still has Ashi's photo in his room.
Wow, that's amazing. Sure.
You know, and that's 20 years ago. But one of the songs that makes me think of Ashi the most is Ford's Toysness and Beatles. I think everybody thinks of that when you think of Bivika, amongst others. I have to ask, how and where did that song originate from?
I must tell you, though, that that Ashley, a.k.a. Mr. Fat Mesel, rest in peace, he was a petrol cop himself.
Yes, yes, very much.
He had a Toyota SR5, I think it was, with the mag wheels.
Yeah.
And I know exactly who he bought that car from as well. And a little bit of the story from the guy that he bought the car from. But Ford's Nissan's Toys Beatles, that actually happened before there was BVK. That song happened because of somebody being extremely homesick, like he cannot believe. So we went on tour in the UK in 95 as Prophets of the City. We toured, she was almost every single day, and it just, you're just in go mode.
Mm-hmm.
You're here, you're there, you're in Scandinavia, you're in Germany, you're in East Berlin, you're in West Berlin, she was like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And one day I was laying under a table on the floor, and that was my bed in London. And I wrote the song. Pas vrijdag aan in July, dus uit voor de weekend dat ik uitgekeken. You know, the lyrics just flowed out of my brain, through the pen onto the paper, and I wrote this. And then the chorus came immediately. I said, Fords and Innocents, any toys, any Beatles. And it just me in the room. The other guys on their own missions. And you know, on each Prophets of the City album, there was always a, for lack of a better term, Afrikaans song or song with that was done in our dialect. Junior Ishmael came along, and then we had a little bit of Kosa, Sutu, yeah. And you know, that was little vernacular sprinkles in the music. And when I wrote Fords, Nissens, Toys, and Beatles, I knew the song is not going to make it onto a Prophets of the City album. Mm. It just won't sit right on a POC yeah. album. I didn't know what I was going to do with the song.
Okay.
And then we had a moment to come home, and I was sitting on the plane, and the first person that popped into my head was Fat.
Mm.
I was like, yo, Fat is a friend of mine.
Mm.
DJ Hammer. Nah, Hammer's also a lekker bra.
Mm.
So it would make sense then. I mean, we homies from Cape Town. Maybe I need to go and pitch this idea to Fat. You know, let's bring three brasse from Cape Town together. Yeah. Brasse van die Kaap, some brasse van die Kaap.
Yeah.
When I came home, because we were so close to Mr. Fat, he would pop in and come and, you know, and visit us in Mitchell's Plain and vice versa. We would go to Bonteville and actually pitched this idea to him in his in the living room in Bonteville. And I was like, Fat, my bro, I got this idea for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just thinking of me, you and Hammer, and I'm thinking of DJ Easy because that light is gevaarlijk as a DJ. E20. My bad. DJ E20.
Yeah.
Or Enver.
Yeah.
His name wasn't even E20 yet.
It was Enver.
That name also just came at the later stage. So I was like, because E isn't such a quiet DJ and whatever. And I don't want to be a DJ in this group. I'm just thinking maybe we need to be three rappers, you, me, and Hammer, and then we get Enver as the DJ. And Fat was like, okay, nah, as fast as quiet. And then Fat was like, okay, he's going to approach Hammer. He approached Hammer with the idea. Everybody was happy. And then I brought out the page. Same page from London, boom, on the table, and I told the brasse, he's the Easter number, Fords, Nissens, Toys, and Beatles. Scrape, yellow, whatever yellow will scrape, up in number.
Yeah.
And then I pitched this idea to our manager at the time, Mr. Lance Stern, and I told him, Lance, look, I'm putting together this group called BVK, Brasse van die Kaap, and this is our first single that I want to do. And Lance was like, okay, cool, makes sense, down, go for it. And that was the birth of Fords, Nissens, Toys, Beatles, and Brasse van die Kaap.
Yeah, essentially BVK. Because I had no idea that was actually the start of it. And it's one of those songs that I think is a timeless classic because if you play it today, and even if young kids have never heard of BVK or POC, and they hear that song, I think it just instantly just makes people relate to hip-hop and the culture and cars and B-boys. We didn't talk about that today.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just an incredible legacy that I think you all still do, and thank you for that.
Well, you're most welcome. I also think that song, if you listen to each person's verse,
yeah.
It comes from, although we're speaking about the same thing, but we all have a very different experience.
Mm.
And also, it's got a lot to do of where we come from as well. You know, Fat comes from Bonteville, Hammer came out of Woodlands, and a lot of that was based on real circumstance and real situations and real people and all of that type of stuff as well. And, you know, so I was speaking about a guy called Ali. And Ali was one of Fat's friends and band members at the time in Jam B.
Yeah.
He was their DJ. And then Ali became our roadie and road manager, and he toured the world with us. And then, you know, it's that type of thing. So that's how we built this. And I think it's in the beginning or the end, you hear car alarm, beep, 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 in the song.
Yeah.
That is my Ford Cortina 30S.
Oh, wow.
And you hear the revving. That's the Ford Cortina 30S. I recorded that sound with a mic. And right at the end, you hear kid saying vroom, vroom, that type of thing. That's my elder son.
Wow. That is so crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we could talk about cars and hip hop all day. But let's end off with what is in your garage now and what would you really like in your garage one day?
Yeah.
If you could. So what are you driving now and what would you really like to drive?
There's cars outside my garage. There's one in front of the garage. The garage is empty right now. There's a couple of wheels in there waiting for a car to roll in. Sure. DJ, easier with you?
Yeah, I'm driving a Jeep now. It's the second Jeep I own. Okay. It's not my dream car, but when I got it for a really good deal. I think it was just a car that I've always wanted. And I thought, okay, cool. It's affordable. Gets me to where I want to. So I'm happy with this car and I'm making this car, my daily, as they say. But if Father Christmas is listening to this podcast and he wanted to talk to the director at Mercedes, GLC, AMG, 63, wouldn't it be bad? Wow. So I've been a good boy. I haven't been naughty this year. So if he's listening, that would be, the keys would be cool under the tree, So, okay.
Yo, let's start with the drift cars. There's two Nissan S13s, 200 SXs over there, the S13s, and then there's a Nissan S14 as well. In fact, there's two Nissan S14s as well. Chivas. No, there's one Nissan. Sorry, I sold the one car. So there's one S13 and two S14s.
Okay.
There's a Ford Ranger. And we've come to realize that our lifestyle requires a bucky. My wife also had a Jeep at one stage, a beautiful, clean Compass. But that Jeep quickly became a bucky because all the tools and all the drift wheels and everything went in there and the dogs and everything else. And she just got tired of it. And she's like, just sell this thing and just get a bucky again. So we always had bucky. So there's a Ford Ranger bucky. Okay. There's also a BMW 120D. There's a Nissan what is this thing? A 720 bucky. Laying in somebody's yard.
Oh my God.
In somebody's yard in Grassy Park that we're still trying to build into something. And then there's a Bentat Nissan S13 on a farm in Philippi. We all said, how do you say? These visions of all these, all these delusions about building these cars up again. Yeah. That's where I'm at the moment. So I think probably if I could fill that space and the same like DJ Easy, I think I've also been all right this year as well. So Father Christmas, whoever's out there, just go to Japan as a belief. I can tell you exactly. You won't even have to stress about it, Father Christmas. I'll tell you where to go and who you can speak to. It will take a lot of PT out of the equation and a lot of guesswork. Just go to Smoky Nagata from Top Secret in Japan and just bring me a GTR 34 Skyline as a belief. That's all that I want.
Yeah. Wow.
Please, and just,
My dream garage has gone from a dream car AE86, which is still there, but it's now compartmentalized, like the sections. I want a van, I want a bucky. I don't know which one because I thought it was the Raptor, but now I don't know. So, you can't even ask me what's my dream car anymore.
I wasn't going to ask.
No, I don't know. It will always be a Toyota Truno AE86, always.
Yeah.
But there's a whole lot of others that comes with it.
Yeah. I mean, I'll even promise Father Christmas I'll go to bed early. I mean, from now until whenever, if he can bring me a Pagani Zonda.
Oh, wow.
That's a belief, Father Christmas. I'm not asking for much. Just one, not even. But I think, we're living in a culture and we're living in a day and age where there's a lot of passionate people, about cars. Yeah. And if we also look at the lifestyles that we live and where we are living as well, I think probably the ultimate vehicle would be a nice sort of all-rounder, like your new Toyota Hiluxes, like your Raptors and all these different types of stuff and SUVs that can do everything, I would say. And because, once again, of the challenges that we face, I'm also just thinking you need something big that's safe as well.
Yeah.
And I'm always listening to what she's saying. She's like, no, if you get me a car, it's got to be an SUV, something that's high. So I want to climb pavements. I want to be safe and all these things. And she's like, I'm over the low cars now. So it's like, and I showed her Honda S2000 wide body kit. Yeah. This thing is her fuck. And I know exactly who built that car. It's got air ride, everything. And she used to drool over the S2000s.
Yeah.
And last night, she's like, I'm not interested. I'm not interested. And then she's looking at the Jeeps with the big wheels, angry face, lift kits, winches on, and Amaldian die, the deer would afkom. The roof has got to come. And she's like, okay, now we're talking. And I'm like, wow, look how life's changed. Yeah.
But thank you so much for the both of you for a very lekker chat. And thank you. Thanks for diving with J9.
Yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity.